All right, amazing. Well, here we are, Ziori Zeneca, two Z's, one podcast. Welcome to the show. Zeneca, thank you so much for making time. How are you, my friend?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing well. Life's pretty good at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I hate how these shows always start with some awkward-ass, very serious, formal intro. It's so much better when it can just flow like a conversation. So I'm hoping you'll ask me some questions along the way as well. But excited to dive into crypto, gaming, and kind of this new world of play-to-earn that I think is brewing. Maybe an unpopular opinion. A lot of my friends have been saying, you're high on 2021. This is all about AI, and you need to just get into line and admit it, you know, you need to jump on the AI thing. I think AI X gaming could maybe be a future that is still a little bit underexplored and underestimated. But maybe first steps first. Where did your journey in crypto begin? Did it start with gaming for you, or did it start with something more fundamental on the financial side?
So I've always been a gamer. I played board games, card games, video games, everything. And then in 2005, I got into poker. So like online poker is basically what I've had two jobs in my life. One was a professional poker player, and the second is a crypto degen. It's kind of how I describe it. And so, yeah, I did poker from like 2005 to 2021, pretty much. It was my full-time job, so 15, 16 years. But it was like 2017 that I first got introduced into the crypto world like properly. I had a friend who was like, do you know what Ethereum is? And I was like, no idea. And he said, we should look into it, we can buy some. And we did, and I thanked him every day. It wasn't super early, it was like $200. It was still relatively early. And that was it. That's how I got into it. And then the 2017, 2018 cycle, I kind of like crashed and burned like most people. It was like great all the way up, and then round trip basically everything the way down. Went back to poker. And then 2021 is when I like fully got in.
Wow. Okay. That's quite the journey. Not super different from mine in terms of timeline. 2017 was also when I like made the not full time, but I'm going to start buying stuff. I'm going to make wallets. I actually felt comfortable using the technology. Before that point, I was very timid. I almost took the self-custody thing too seriously. Like, I'm not prepared for this. What do I do with it? You know, the seed phrase concept really freaked me out when I was a total noob user. And I actually tried to make an early, fully on-chain game in like early 2018, late 2017 called Crypto Geodes. It was supposed to be sort of like Pet Rock, a little bit of like turn-based battling, almost like Axie Lite. The moment we gave up was when I discovered Axie. I went, oh, somebody has just already done this, but better and with a real IP instead of our stupid little Pet Rock idea. And then somebody was smart enough to mint those Ether Rocks, original 100 NFT collection. Seeing those sell for six figures really upset me. It's like, man, I was making digital rocks before that, damn it. But we never pushed anything off the test net because back then we were so purist and serious about it. We were like, I don't want to waste space on the blockchain with nonsense, our stupid rocks.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, we were a little too serious. I've learned not to take things quite so seriously since then.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people fall guilty of like being too early to certain trends and things. And many other similar stories, I think, in the space.
Yeah, what is it? Losing the forest for the trees or whatever, where you see all these problems and then you overwhelm yourself and throw the whole thing away. So before we dive super blockchain, though, I do want to talk just esports, regular gaming, because one of the reasons that you and I connected, love of Dota, Dota 2 for the layman's out there, MOBA game similar to League of Legends, one of the greatest games ever created. It's in the Valve ecosystem, so there's all sorts of cool stuff in terms of, skins and monetization, and it's one of these games that is truly free to play, and it's not monetized in like a weird gameplay gate and pain sort of thing. The whole game is pain, and then they sell you hats to try to make you feel better. It's a genius business model.
I mean, the thing is, it makes you hate yourself, but you still keep going back for more and more and more.
And there is sort of this weird triangle I think of when it comes to esports of poker, StarCraft, and Dota. And I think a lot of that has to do with TeamLiquid.net. Were you a Team Liquid guy at all?
At various stages, I was a fan of them. Actually, I have an interesting other connection to Team Liquid. Back when I was a poker player, I got mental game coaching by this guy, Jared Tendler. He ended up being the mental game coach for Team Liquid, the Dota team, maybe the whole squad. But I've been following Team Liquid since the early days, but I like players rather than teams in terms of following.
I was thinking about the website, the actual forums, like TeamLiquid.net.
Oh, right. No, I was never on the forums. I just used it to like look at like the Wikipedia or whatever, the Liquipedia.
Yeah.
That's the one, Liquipedia. Yeah.
Wow. No, that's fascinating because I think of so much of that culture being attributed to that website. I guess I'm over-indexing on my own anecdotal experiences, but
I mean, it's possible that like I have such a terrible memory that like back in the early days, I was definitely on some forums. I don't know what they were. I remember like I played like Dota 1 and then Heroes of New Earth and then Dota 2. So I don't know where I was at those various times. It's entirely possible I was on there at some point.
And did you ever get into League of Legends? Did you try the Dark Elder
Brother? I tried
it once
and I was just like, yeah, it's just terrible. It's just the worst version of Dota.
Yeah.
I tried watching it a little bit more. Like I probably watched maybe 5 or 10 games, which is not nothing. You know, it's a decent amount of 3 hours. But yeah, it was.
A funny lost story from the esports vault was way back in like, I don't know, maybe 2012 or something. I was at a PAX East. I was at a Riot after party and you know, League of Legends was doing well. Dota was doing well. And I met this Riot employee who recognized me and I was a full-time Dota caster at the time. And he said, oh, you're Zayori. How come you don't cast League of Legends? Like, why did you do Dota instead? I said, dog, because your game doesn't have a fucking replay system because there's nothing for me to cast. If I like, all I can do is beg you for a job or do something else. In Dota, I could just start casting games. It was more egalitarian. I could just pop open Star Ladder. At the time, there were so many Star Ladder matches, there weren't enough casters to cover them. So there was actually a little niche you could fill by just practicing and showing up and turning on your stream because games were going unbroadcast. That was a very unique time in history where there was just free content. Like, literally.
I remember, like, the golden era. I think the first, like, Dota streams I ever watched or listened to were like it was before like Twitter, and you'd like download the audio of it beforehand, and then you'd like go through the replay on your own. And oh man, aging myself a little bit, but that was like in the early mid 2000s.
Yeah, I know with Warcraft 3, that was a big thing, like Warcraft Radio. Exactly. Yeah, you download the replays, you download the audio file, and you'd press play at the same time, and that's how you would get commentary.
Good times. That was good old days.
But I mean, that was the groundwork for a lot of this stuff. I think of, I don't know, were you a Diablo 2 player at all? It sounds like you were pretty deep in Blizzard. Yeah,
Diablo 1, Diablo 2. Yeah.
I think of Diablo 2 specifically as like a precursor to social media. Like that friends list, you know, /FM/FL, that ability to blast your entire list. And you had two options. You could either DM people directly or you could blast your entire list. There were no groupings. Yeah. So your list was this really
like
curated. Yeah, that was how things would spread virally quickly within the game. And you'd know, like, jump into this lobby and you'd have all these password patterns and stuff. So games were private, but kind of public within your group because you could kind of figure out, oh, that's Billy. He always makes his password 334. That to me feels like the real kind of community building. That it's a shame Blizzard couldn't hang on to it, but I don't think a single person that made those amazing games that we're talking about still works at Blizzard. So I guess in some ways,
I think it's been a lot of time.
It's been a lot of RuneScape. Dude, I faded RuneScape. I was one of those kids that was just like, haha, you play RuneScape. I'm going to go play real games. And looking back, it pains me so much because I think RuneScape might be one of the most timeless, greatest online games ever created.
Yeah, I played it for a year and I basically had to stop because it was like consuming my entire life. I was probably like 14 at the time and I would play 16 hours a day of RuneScape. I was barely sleeping, just bumbling my way through school. But I look back on that time and it like set me up for so much of like poker and crypto and life. The lessons you learn playing a game like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, there's a lot of people have referenced this, but I think you're exactly right about poker having this like transferable skill set where you kind of learn about like discipline and emotional management and risk management and reading people and real time stress management. And like the first couple hands are kind of easy. It's when you're 3 hours in and you're a little bit tilted and you're tired. And like, that's when the real skill caps, you start to see your inner self. It's almost like a trip, you know, you're in that 8 hour tournament on the final table, you're in a little bit of a trance. You know, it's a pretty cool flow state that you can enter. And it took me a while. I ramped up to poker. I liked it when I was younger and then I got serious about it in college and got so frustrated that I quit and then realized that I was worse at math than I thought. And then as a later adult kind of came back to it and played it just in these little, sort of like Dota. I had that feeling every so often, I'm in the mood to play a little poker this weekend. Like, you know, let's get Bovada going. Let's figure it out. And, you know, even low stakes stuff, it's fun just to get into the cards for a little while and escape from reality, just like Dota or Counter-Strike or any of these other games. But as a later adult, I feel like, especially now with crypto and getting into more trading and actual investing, poker gave me such a great foundation in my 20s of like learning how to manage my emotions compared to some of the crazy knuckleheads we see in this industry. I'm sure you share some of those parallels, but at what point did that become apparent to you? Were you always just in love with poker, or did you have a similar kind of touch and go relationship with it?
I was pretty much instantly in love with it. So like I've, like I said, love games, love card games. And it was, I was like year 11 or 12 of high school at a friend's house playing Halo. Eight of us, big split screen TV, all that kind of stuff. And then
real quick, how old are you? I'm curious.
I'm 36.
Okay, I'm 35. So the way you're talking about video games, I'm just like, dude, we have to be, because Halo 1, Blood Gulch on LAN, I mean, that was some of my classic young gamer. Ugh.
So many good memories. But yeah, you know, we ordered pizza, we took a break, turned the TV on, and there was like, you know, ESPN had the World Series of Poker on, and one of the eight of us had like, knew how to play or knew the rules. And so he was telling the rest of us, and instantly I was like, this is awesome, I'm obsessed. And I have like this very addictive personality, ADHD brain type thing where I get into something. I'm like, all right, got to go online, got to go find all the internet forums. And I would print out pages of forums. Like that's how early it was. I don't have tablets or smartphones or anything. And then I would like buy all the books and I just got completely consumed. And so like from then on, I was like obsessed. And after a while, like, you know, after 5+ years of doing it, it becomes a grind. It's like any other job you do for long enough. It's like, all right, it's, you stop losing that love for it, but it's still, it was like better than any other job I could have thought of at the time.
Yeah, I've had that feeling with esports a few times where even in the darkest moments, it's generally pretty easy to remember, like, man, this beats most other jobs. And I don't have to do a lot of physical labor. It's mostly mental labor. You can get burned out of that and sometimes yearn for a little bit of physical labor, but that's very solvable. You know, being stuck on the other side where you're doing a lot of physical labor and yearning for mental labor, that's a lot harder to produce, right?
I mean, the worst of both worlds where you're like working a dead end 9-to-5 where you're not getting any physical labor and you're not mentally stimulated.
Right.
And
right.
Like, that's I feel very grateful for the life paths I've had.
Totally. So when did you start seeing this gaming and blockchain intersection? Because I, like I said before, I really wanted to see it in 2018. I don't know if you're familiar with Jenkins. He's now a Dota 2 commentator guy. He was a pro player.
Yes, I know Jenkins. Yeah.
He was the lead developer on CryptoGeodes. It was me, him, and one of my childhood buddies. He's actually a computer science guy. Now he mostly just does Dota stuff because it's more fun and it's easier. But when I had really first met him, he was just graduating from Waterloo, where Vitalik went. So he graduated with this insane vigor for just Ethereum and EVM.
Yeah.
And like, dude, we're going to build the future of gaming. And he was really into the fully on-chain gaming kind of concept. And back then, that was really hard. You know, it really limited the kind of games you wanted to build. And meanwhile, this guy's like an aspiring semi-pro Dota player. You couldn't build those kind of games fully on chain back then. It wasn't there yet. We didn't have any of these scaling solutions. So again, we kind of threw the baby out with the bathwater. We just went back to Dota, and then I didn't really come back until like 2021, something like that. Mm. And I had reconnected with PsychOut, Alexander from Axie Infinity, who had played in one of our little open beta alpha test things for CryptoGeodes, exchanged follows. I subscribed to their newsletter. He sent me 3 Axies, never logged in or did anything with them. And then around 2021, I started going, you know, this stuff really does look interesting. These guys actually survived. I can't believe they've been sending me emails for like 3 years. Maybe I should start opening these. And then I just went down the rabbit hole. And I remember it was right as COVID was kicking off because WoW Classic was coming out. And a couple of my friends had flown in so that we could do our WoW Classic LAN party and, you know, go crazy and get the fresh start. And I got to like level 40 or something. Maybe it was when Burning Crusade came out. Whatever it was, though, I didn't make it to the cap and I kind of fell off. And I remember I was buying Axies on the marketplace being like, guys, I think you guys are arguing about WoW gold. I think I'm buying real gold. Like literally, I think we can make more money playing this. And they all just laughed at me or were like, all right, dude, we'll see you later. We're going to go do RFK or whatever the fuck. And that was it. That was the split. That was the beginning of like, they're still playing World of Warcraft. And I've pretty much been in play to earn or GameFi, whatever word you prefer, ever since.
I like, I think I like GameFly a little more, but it was around the same time for me, like early to April-ish 2021. It wasn't Axie. I never really got into Axie. I thought about it a lot, but ended up never getting in. It was, I don't know if you remember Zedron. It was like this horse racing game.
Oh, buddy, do I? Hell yeah, Zedron. Yeah. Definitely. Polygon.
It was, yeah, exactly. One of the first like NFT mints I was ever able to get in on was a Zedron horse drop. It was a, you know, buggy website cluster, just disaster. But like, if you like refresh the web page and like scroll down at the right time, you could click a button and then you could mint and you could sell it for like a 5x or a 10x. And I thought it was the most amazing thing ever, which it was. But I also got I got 6 or 7 horses, and I decided to race a couple of them, and one of them turned out to be good. And so the way that Zedron was worked for a while was like, if you had a good horse, it was just like free money, just entering these races all day. And so for about 6 weeks, I would just, if people ask, what are you doing now? I'm like, I'm a digital horse racer. Like, that's what I do. And I probably made like three to five ETH in that 6 weeks, which at the time was an enormous amount of money for me. It's a good amount of money at any time, but that was my first sort of big break, I would say, in crypto. Before that, I was just kind of losing money on random NFT mints. And
how do you find out about the Zedron mint? Like, what tipped you off to it? Was it a friend that told you, or you see an ad?
Yes, it was a friend group. So like, I think for the first like 2 months in like that I was like properly full time in crypto, I had no idea where to go. Like, how do you find out about these mints and these projects? And like, it was literally this WhatsApp group of poker players that got me into crypto and NFTs. And someone in there was like, hey, I think we should meet some of these, or we should try and meet some of these. And I was like, sure, I have no idea what I'm doing, but it sounds good to me. And
Now, Zedron is very interesting. I have one Zed horse that I kind of bought at the top as like a collector's item. I never really figured it out. It felt very pyramid-y to me, and that was one of those games that I just, every time I considered buying, I genuinely felt like I missed it, which maybe is how you felt with Axie, you know, seeing a $500 Axie. Right. Like, the hell am I buying these things now for? I missed it. Like, you know, nothing against it, but I'm going to go to, you know, bluer oceans or whatever, greener pastures. So it's funny how
once
people
start like trying to apply logic and reason to like the pricing of these things, it all falls apart. Like, none of it makes sense. It's like either everything is overvalued or everything is like undervalued until it's not. It's also dumb.
Yeah,
it's fun at the same time.
Totally. So where did you jump after Zedron? Because Zed is also it's a very light gameplay, right? Obviously, it's a breeding game, but the game itself is just very RNG based horse racing for those that aren't
pretty
aware.
Pretty much, yeah. The actually breeding was like disabled the entire time I was like active on it, so I never even really got into that much.
I didn't.
Yeah,
know that.
It was like two months that they had, which was good because as soon as they enabled it, like obviously the entire ecosystem just flooded with new horses and prices completely collapsed. But that was like, that like solidified my love of NFTs, I think. I was like, this is cool, this is fun. And then I just spent like the next like year just trading and flipping NFTs.
Okay.
All the PFP collections, the art blocks, everything really.
Gotcha. So talk to me about Zen Academy, diving some 2-minute research into your Twitter bio. That seems to be one of the big things that you're working on. Tell me what's going on
basically.
That group.
So like I got into like crypto like March, April 2021, and then by like July, August, I'd gotten so lucky in so many different ways by like trading NFTs, and I basically made a pile of money. I was like, all right, this is awesome, but what do I do now? And what I should have done was sell. But anyway, that's a story for another day. I took some profits, but I was like, I want to stay in crypto. I want to be like, this is what I love. I'm passionate about it. And I like started a newsletter that was taking off. My Twitter account was taking off. And I thought it would be cool to like create some sort of a project, but I'm not a game designer. I'm not a developer. I'm not any of these things. I'm a writer and content creator. And that's when like sort of like the pain point of getting people into crypto was sort of like front and center to my mind. I think a lot of people, like the onboarding process was really difficult. It's still pretty difficult, but it's a lot better now than it was then. And so I thought, let me create a community that is focused on education and like teaching people about NFTs and how to get into the space and how to navigate it safely. And that was the origin story of it. I basically said, I'm going to sell some NFTs as like membership access through Zen Academy. I said, there's no promises. I don't know what this is going to be. It's all an experiment. We're just starting out as a Discord server. We might always just be a Discord server. We might grow into something much bigger. And then we spent about 2 years, ended up having like at one point 15 people on the team, tried to build a whole business out of it.
But wow.
As NFTs crashed and the bear market came and like revenue just disappeared, we effectively failed to create a sustainable business model. But we, as a community, have stuck around and survived and I would say thrived. And we still have a very active Discord server, you know, where we're getting whitelist spots to NFT mints and we're trading meme coins and we're just still hanging out and doing cool things together.
Very cool. There's something to be said for just surviving. You know, that's a big part of, I learned that working at Axie, right? I was at Sky Mavis for like a year and a half or so. So I worked like directly under Jiho and got to follow him around. I was a little bit lucky, you know, similar to the way you tell your story. I feel the same about mine. I was watching Axie for a long time, but my timing of getting in, I was like the first employee that they hired outside of Vietnam. You know, they have a couple of international founders, but the original team is very heavy Vietnamese. So I got in like April, May of 2021. So pretty much right before, you know, and a big chunk of my salary was in AXS tokens. Fixed amount of tokens, normalized for a moving average. And I got in when AXS was around $4. Obviously, we went way higher than that. But, you know, there's a journey connected to that where you just, if it happens too fast, it's very easy to spend it irresponsibly also. And I definitely bought the top of many a collection. And I don't really regret it, but I've spent the last couple years trying to figure out how to level that out and get everything back on track and getting square with the tax man and all that kind of stuff. Very easy for that to get away from you when markets can flash crash between like FTX and the Ukraine-Russia conflict and various other global things. Pretty scary how fast money can evaporate when you have it all on the table. And I was pretty risk on for a good like 2 years there. I mean, a peak Axie revolution like November 2021 at NFT NYC that year. I mean, we were really talking like, dude, this is the revolution. Buy or get left behind. And it's like, that was the literal top. And the only reason I feel a little okay about that is I was buying too. So I was giving people bad advice, but I was also following my own bad advice. Not that that excuses it, but at least, you know, it was earnest. Yeah. It was genuine. It was genuine hype. But
I basically did the exact same thing. I think it's a pretty common journey that a lot of people in crypto, especially those who stick around for 5-10 years, you make a stupid amount of money and then you end up giving hopefully not all of it back but a lot of it back and make reckless mistakes and you learn and hopefully the next time around you do a little bit better.
Definitely. Well, and I like that you have some emphasis on education. I feel like it's something that's so boring that nobody cares about, but it's so bloody important. And I'm not the guy, but someone's got to be the guy. It sounds like you're one of the guys at least trying to help bridge the gap and just give people like more neutral tools. Like that's the hardest part is everybody wants to educate, but they want to give it with the slant of, use this centralized exchange or, oh, by the way, use this really seedy side wallet that nobody's ever heard of. It's like, it's hard, to make an objective crypto guide that works for everyone because there's so many different tools.
And the really tough part about it is that you have to update it because crypto grew so quickly. Like we created this this email course called 30 Days of NFTs, and then we did one of crypto. But the 30 Days of NFTs one was the real success story, which was completely free. You just go to the website, 30daysofnfts.com. I think it's still live, actually. You enter your email address, and then every day for the next 30 days, you get sent an email, and it'll teach you about, like, what is an NFT? Or maybe, I can't remember, what is Bitcoin? What is the blockchain? What is an NFT? What is a wallet? And after 30 days, it should hopefully have someone onboarded because it really takes that amount of time to get into the swing of things. But I look back on it now, like this was 2 years ago, so much of it is outdated. Like we're only talking about OpenSea, only talking about MetaMask. Like I would never recommend MetaMask as a wallet now. There's way better options and security options have improved and gas and layer twos. There's just infinitely more stuff now. So that was always the difficulty with educational content is you have to keep updating and keep creating new content. And to do that in a neutral way without sort of like most people that create content these days are there's like referral links or they're shilling their own bags. And not that there's anything particularly wrong with that. If they're, lots of people shill Bitcoin, that's great. It's just
Yeah.
There's obviously a tipping point when you start shilling $1 million market cap shitcoins that obviously is not great. But yeah.
Sure. 100%. You know, fresh off the holidays, I'm curious, are the normies in your life coming around to crypto? Because this was the first Christmas. This year I went and visited my friend's family, so I didn't go home. Mm. I went to Philly and hung out with a bunch of Italians. And basically all of them were like, oh yeah, I made a shitload on Bitcoin this year. And I was stunned because none of them were very technical at all. One of them had talked to me about it before, and he was like, I cashed out $1 million. I'm like, wow, congratulations. That's pretty good. You really kicked ass. Awesome. So I was a little mind blown. That was a reality check for me that, like, the ETFs, at least in America, seem to be working to some degree. Folks that are tuned into stocks and that kind of stuff, a lot of them just summarized it with, it's kind of just like a stock, dude. Like, don't overthink it. And they don't know. They don't care. They don't love it. They don't hate it. They're almost more business neutral on it. But I'm bullish. I mean, hearing my friend's, like, 60-year-old aunt talk about how she made a bag off Bitcoin, it's like, power to you, lady.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I'm curious if you've got some similar sort of anecdotes, or if that's...
Not so much. I think, okay. I mean, the ETFs aren't as big of a deal here in Australia.
And you guys don't have any legal ETFs for Bitcoin yet?
I think we
do. Oh, just nobody cares.
basically, yeah. I don't know too much about it. Maybe the fees are high or... But yeah, basically, obviously, the American ETFs make all the news and have almost all the volume.
Yeah.
But I do... I have had over the last, like, 1 to 2 months, like, random people, either family members or friends, just, like, reach out to me after having never cared about crypto for the last 2 years since the last bull market and be like, hey, what do you think about XRP, or is it a good time to buy Bitcoin? So it definitely more people are, it's retail is like coming, and it's that time in the cycle where it captures everyone's attention again. But haven't had too many people make a bunch of money that like aren't full-time crypto. It's awesome that people are out there doing that. And actually I remember hearing one of the BlackRock digital asset team members, I think he was on Bankless, and talking about how the majority of ETF purchases are individuals and retail. It's not like a lot of people think, oh, it's institutions, it's a giant funds, but they generally move slower, and like it takes them a while to come up with a thesis and to get approval and to decide, yes, we're going to buy, and then to when are we going to buy? Whereas by making it available as like a stock ticker, then just average everyday people can just like, oh, I'll buy some Bitcoin, I'm just going to buy it now. It's easy. It's,
totally.
You know, think about custody and all that kind of stuff.
It makes it way less scary, for sure. And that's a part. Have to remember that everyone, even right now, that's touching crypto is sort of like an early adopter to some degree. I guess if you're using crypto through a wallet, you know, like an actual native crypto user, you're still pretty damn early, just objectively. You know, most people are pretty slow to bring in technology and feel comfortable with it. That's why the middle of the bell curve and it is kind of is what it is, you know? It makes me slightly more optimistic for gaming as well. You know, to circle back where we started this whole podcast, I hear a lot of people saying it's AI meta. It's going to stay the AI meta. I don't see gaming coming back into vogue like 2021 anytime soon. And that might be true. 2021 was crazy. And we can't forget about the COVID catalyst, and people were just sitting at home instead of going out and enjoying the world like is healthy. And that was awesome for gaming, but very not sustainable and very inorganic. You know, that was like a manufactured kind of thing.
So I
still think gaming has a place, right? I don't think gaming's going out of fashion. And just as the demystification starts to happen, I wonder if this next generation of gamers starts to get to the point where they can buy stuff. And that like weird middle gap of, I guess, kind of millennials that have this, I love games, but I hate NFTs. I think that's going to be a very vocal minority in the pretty near future. Because it's hard to make that case that it's all a conspiracy when like your grandma is making money on it too. You know, it's like, all right, wait. Yeah. So this guy's, my buddy's mom is a teacher. Like you're saying she's in on the conspiracy? Like, come on, man. It's just, this is now just ubiquitous technology. Why wouldn't we want to use it for gaming? I'm not even trying to sell you anything. Just like, this just makes sense now.
I completely agree. And the other nonsensical part about all of that is that it's the same people that hate NFTs and NFT gaming. They also hate the traditional gaming companies. They're like, oh my God, they're like, there's microtransactions and they're price gouging us. And it's, you know, they're selling the game as like a uncompleted thing. And it's like, there is another option. It is taking the power away from these giant gaming companies and putting it back in the hands of indie creators, individuals, users. And for some reason, there's some disconnect where they hate the big gaming companies, but then they also hate crypto. And it just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, obviously, I understand why some people think that way, but as you break it down and you have the information that we have, it definitely doesn't make sense. And I think that, yeah, people will, A, come around, and then younger generations will just grow up and be more accustomed to crypto and digital currencies and okay with it, that it'll eventually just morph into a natural state.
Totally. And I also think we have to remember that there is scar tissue from 2021, just like there was scar tissue from the ICO era. There were a lot of great successful ICOs, like Axie was one of them. I always think of Brave Browser, right? There's a lot of great examples now of that started as an ICO a long time ago, and now it's turned into a real flourishing product. We need to see that same shakeout for 2021, and we kind of have, but people now will start to see, oh, there are real games, real IPs using this technology. It just literally took them 4 years to build something that feels more akin to a AAA game, because that's how long it takes to make AAA games.
It takes time. Yes.
It's really, really hard. It's also funny to reflect on 2021. Why were we all so bullish on hyperinflation?
Yeah,
because it seems so obvious now. Like every time Jiho and I would do an interview and somebody would try to get us with that hard hitting, like, well, but the whole system's based on growth. We'd be like, yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. But we're growing like crazy. So the system has to be, or else it's going to be even worse in terms of supply crunch. Mm-hmm. People would go, okay, but what happens when growth stops? We would always say, well, then we're going to flip the switch and then we're going to turn the economy deflationary. And they would always kind of go, all right, Junior, like, easy to say, maybe harder to execute. But in that moment, you don't really have anything tangible that you can challenge, because objectively, we're still growing, numbers are going up, all that. And you know, when I was leaving Axie around 2022 period, late 2022, I kind of had this, we're not moving fast enough, you know? And now we're seeing this rubber band effect come back the other way. And I kind of had this snap feeling myself of feeling kind of guilty and like almost stupid of like, how did I not see this? Of course, this hyperinflation wasn't going to work. Like, we overjuiced this thing for way too long and just left that nozzle running, went out to lunch, went out to dinner, went on holiday, came back and went, all right, maybe we should think about closing the nozzle. And it just makes me wonder what could have happened if those like Axie burns and Axie sinks, like that current nightmare event. It's very deflationary. I love it. That thing soaks up tokens and resources like crazy. Imagine if we had all of those levers in like late 2022, how much SLP could we have prevented from coming into existence or taken out before it was even made? All this kind of stuff it seems so obvious now. And I guess what I'm mostly trying to say is, yeah, why wasn't it more obvious then? Because it really seems so obvious now. There's nothing like intrinsically novel about any of this. It's all the same economic principles. It's just digital tulips, man. It's not really that different.
I think it's I think we all like drink the Kool-Aid a little bit in bull markets, because like you said, like other people external will question it and probably say, hey, I think it's too inflationary. You should look at this, you should maybe do this. But when you're in the thick of it and you see the growth numbers and you see the number just keeps going up, you're like, they're crazy. I know better. It's the same with it's why, you know, when you're at the top of a bull market, no one is saying, hey, I think we're at the top. That's what everyone is saying. It's a revolution. It's a new paradigm. It's a super cycle. There's all these narratives that we all believe that like, hey, this time it's different. And the famous quote, the four most dangerous words in investing are this time it's different. But for whatever reason, we drink that Kool-Aid and we think of it. And then, you know, it all crashes. And in hindsight, we look back and be like, oh yeah, that was really ridiculous. Like, hyperinflation or $800,000 for a monkey JPEG or whatever. Like, there's so many stupid things that happened in 2021. And I think we all kind of knew, like, yeah, this is ridiculous and it's going to crash at some point, but it always seems to be like, yeah, it's going to be way in the future.
Yeah. I'm part of what tainted me for sure was feeling the parallels to esports really early, like before Twitch even, when it was just Justin TV, you know, these very early like day 9 StarCraft daily kind of days. everyone that I talked to said, kid, you're crazy. You know, I was studying business. I graduated in 2012 with a degree in entrepreneurship. I got into esports in 2010, started my first business at the end of that year, running tournaments and LANs and stuff. And everyone told me, like, you're just looking for an excuse to play video games and trying to justify it with some bullshit business plan. So much so that, like, one of my professors refused to read the business plan and said, nope, you got to pick a real business. If you want to make video games, that's the only business model that I think is real. But, like, you're going to run tournaments and you think people are going to pay you to watch you play video games? Get the fuck out of here. This is a classroom. This is serious. Yeah. So, like, I feel like I had some of that scar tissue of, like, that was a moment where 99 were looking left, 1% of us were looking right, and I was totally in that 1% pretty early on. I didn't have the money or the skills or the communication ability to really, like, capitalize on it appropriately, but I still saw it. And half a decade later, I saw the fruits of that scouting and like, okay, now we're peak bubble and I've got half a decade of experience under my belt when a lot of people are just coming in or have been here for half a year. So when we were talking Revolution 2021, my parents are telling me, no, you're crazy, just cash it out. I'm like, that's what you guys told me in 2010 also, and you were wrong. This time they were
it's
more
right. It's why it's so hard. Like, it's everyone thinks, oh, in that moment I will make the smart decision, or but like, it's really, really, really hard to time the top or to even just take reasonable profits unless you come in with a really strong plan and strategy ahead of time. And
yeah,
you see it time and time and time and time again. You see it with meme coins, you see it with AI agents happening now, Gable back then. It's going to happen again with gaming. It's going to happen again with meme coins. History will just keep repeating and rhyming and repeating and rhyming because new people will enter and they won't heed the advice of the people that came before them, because some lessons you just have to learn yourself.
Definitely. There's an emotional component to it that you can't put into words until we have Neuralink, at least. Then maybe we'll have this hyper empathy, like, dude, just feel the pain that I felt and you'll really want to avoid doing that. But until then, that words can only get you so far. What is your take on meme coins, by the way? Are you a meme coin hater? Do you think they just are and they're, you know, can't love them, can't hate them? They're just a thing.
I trade them a lot. Like, my portfolio at the moment is like 80% meme coins and AI agents. Like, it's just like, I follow the liquidity and the attention and where all the mindshare is. And it seems to me that is the cycle.
Yeah.
I think most people, well, I don't know. A lot of people will have remembered the talk from Tokyo 2049 by Murad about like meme coin super cycle, and he laid out a really good thesis about how, you know, they're more egalitarian. They're, you know, you don't have VCs and insiders and investors dumping on you all the time. The tokens are fully invested and unlocked for most part and all out there. I think that makes a lot of sense. But at the end of the day, they're also just there's nothing substantive there. They're going to exist forever, I'm pretty sure. And I think that some of them will survive and do well long term. Like Doge is still a, you know, multi $10 billion market cap. But 99.99999% of them will go to zero. And so I think it's just a giant game of hot potato, which you can play, you can have fun with. In some ways, it's kind of like poker, where it's like you play PvP, play against other people. If you're good and you're smart and can process information quickly and have your emotions under control and a good system, you can make money, but someone has to lose money in order for you to make money. And also that it will get tougher over time, there'll be more bots, and it'll just, I don't know. But I have nothing against meme coins, and I think that they're fun and all that. But yeah, a lot of people get wrecked.
Did you happen to see the news that came out about the potential class action suit against Pump.Fun?
Yeah, I did see that today. Yeah, which is interesting. Not unsurprising, because they had a lot of shit on their website, especially when they were live streaming. There was some crazy stuff happening. So I'm not at all shocked that there's a lawsuit.
Yeah, the meta got brutal there, and obviously you can use a platform like that. Specifically coordinated, like, rug pulls. There are these words get tossed around, but they have like actual definitions. And, you know, financial crimes are financial crimes. Using a cryptocurrency or an anonymous platform doesn't make it less of a crime. A little bit harder to find you or track down, perhaps, but still illegal and worth pursuing damages if they think there's some path to be able to get money. We'll see what happens. I had a moment where I went, oh God, but also, like, you said, not surprised. There's so much, much shit came through that. That's the weird thing about freedom, right? It kind of swings both sides. You have the freedom to be an asshole, and then someone else has the freedom to be an asshole back. So, like, you can cross the line, then that means they have the freedom to sue you, and you get the freedom to appeal, and eventually it does stop somewhere. But freedom can be a bitch, dude. That line gets pushed, and then someone pushes it the other way, and I'm kind of here for it, you know, obviously within some extreme limits, but I think most of us are here because we have some basic interest in that libertarian kind of freedom is a good thing, all things equal, I guess, is maybe a fair summary.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, like, I mean, a lot of people say, like, code is law when it comes to crypto. And, like, you know, it's a blockchain, it's decentralized, people can do what they want, which I like in theory. But then at the end of the day, at least for now, we're all citizens of nations that have actual laws. And you kind of still have to abide by those, or not. But then if you don't, then there will be consequences.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's that, like, freedom, not freedom of consequences, freedom to do stuff, but not free from consequences, not what freedom means. Are you familiar with this DN-404 or ERC-404? That first one was the Pandora 404.
I remember that.
Did you trade that at all?
Hybrid. I did. I think I definitely lost money on aggregate trading a bunch of them, but it was interesting at the time. I like the concept. Basically making NFTs liquid.
Yes, dude. Yeah. Exactly. No, I'm glad to hear that you've heard of it and understand the high level, because that the new project I'm working on is based on this DN-404 thing. And we discovered it around the time Pandora popped off and went, huh, this is really fascinating. And immediately we thought, how can this apply to, like, gaming, GameFi, play to earn? And coming up with a model instead of the breeding inflationary side of Axie and all these other derivatives like crypto unicorns and stuff, going the other way, and you rip packs, and then it's like fusion, kind of like auto chess style. So you're always using the floor commons to combine your way up and then get towards less supply of more valuable assets that are then used in gameplay in some sort of risk reward kind of, let's say, Cambria type scenario, where you want to use your best asset because you want to be able to go extract loot. But if you die, you lose your best asset. And that's the whole loop of the economy that helps keep it balanced, is that basic esports energy. Everyone's betting on their own skill and power curve to be able to win in that specific moment. And obviously, humans make mistakes or get caught off guard or whatever. And that's a good thing in terms of deflationary stuff getting destroyed in the economy and whatnot. So we were impressed with what Pandora did, but I felt like they missed the opportunity to build the level 2, kind of like CryptoKitties.
Yeah. You know?
The Axie founders all met each other by playing CryptoKitties, and they loved it. And then went, okay, we got all these fucking kitties. Now what do we do, man? Can we put them in a game? Can we do something? And I think at the time, Dapper kind of went, nah, this is the game.
Yeah.
So they fucked right off, made their own game, and there you go. Axie Infinity was born, and Axie's kitties, they share some similarities in terms of, concepts and aesthetics. So I'm wondering if Pandora will have a similar thing to CryptoKitties, where it's not the one, but it's going to set the stage, and it needs a year or two to
cook,
and we'll see games start to adopt it. Yeah.
Especially because, they launched on ETH mainnet, and it was not a gas optimized contract. So it was like $50 to trade one of those NFTs, which is just, in any age, that's cost prohibitive. In 2021, mainnet, you could get away with it. But now, it just doesn't make any sense. So people taking that idea and the technology and then building on top of it, I think, is exactly what we'll continue to see happen.
Yeah. We're also thinking about it as use as a Genesis asset, and then almost like a node for additional on-chain resources for crafting. Mm-hmm. So instead of doing like, hey, let's do 10 mints where we're just selling you stuff, let's do a Genesis mint. And then depending on what attributes it has, it emits different resources. Then you use those resources as sort of like a on-chain crafting game to build our armies, almost like a little digital Warhammer, air quotes.
Yeah.
And then that moves into this like sandboxy game where you're actually using the assets and stuff. And to me, that just sounds very similar to 2021, but a little bit slower and methodical, and like it has more levels. Like you said, you have these NFTs, but they're more liquid, and you can make this fully on-chain gamified experience that feels just like a way cooler precursor than just selling NFTs and asking the audience to wait for a year or 2 years until you have a totally finished game, you know?
Yeah, I'm so excited for like the stuff that's coming out now, because the tech is so much better. You have like account abstraction, you have gasless transactions, you have permissionless transactions. It's just And you've got teams that have been building for years and years and years. So like a culmination of everything.
Yeah.
You can create a wallet with email address, a privy and everything like that.
It's crazy. It's like the technology.
I know. If you want to get a friend to play a crypto game now, you can just send them a website and they log in with the email address and they're playing a game. And all right, maybe then finally they can earn some tokens or get NFT or decide to buy something, which they can also now buy with Apple Pay or a credit card. It's gotten like easy enough now that now all we need is fun games. Like, that's the real crux. Once we get some good fun games, I think that's when, and I think we just need one good use case to be like, whether it's a Fortnite or Minecraft or even like a smaller version.
Right.
Once that breaks out, then I think the floodgates will.
One true S tier game is what you're talking about.
Exactly. Like that. Like millions and millions of active players. Right. Yeah.
Like when PUBG dropped and it was that viral sensation where we're all just like, dude, that first 100 hours flew by, you know, that kind of. Totally. I'm with you there. I don't know what game it's going to be. I always tell people it's going to be something we won't expect. It's going to be some weird viral game that no one's going to predict, and it's going to come out of nowhere with some insane story. It just tends to be how these games manifest. When you think about, you know, Dota and StarCraft and League of Legends and all these biggest games ever, Overwatch, they all have these insane stories where they should have failed so many times and they barely succeeded against the odds. And here we are, you know, hundreds of millions of players. The only other thing I would add is I agree we need good games. I also think a little interoperability would go a long way. I'm super bullish on like CCIP, what Chainlink is building to start connecting all the chains together. I don't know if you're familiar with like B3, the publisher that's on Base. So you know, you got Coinbase and we have the Base chain. And then B3 is kind of like their L3, it's more centralized but super fast. I think it's B3.fun. is their Twitter account, and it's like their gaming publishing platform that's very specific for like blockchain gaming stuff. So
sounds great. I'm very bullish on Base. That sounds great.
Yeah, no, very excited about what they're cooking up over there. But I bring it up because they're one of the chains that we've talked to that was very bullish on this omni-chain future. Of like, dude, omni-chain is coming. Like, just embrace it. This whole walled garden thing of exclusive. Let's go the opposite direction. Like, hey, Ronan, your EVM. Hey, Abstract, your EVM. Hey, Polygon, your EVM. Let's all just connect on this. We all like Chainlink, right? Cool. Let's, you know, we got to be a little careful around centralization, but I'm really excited about having this, kind of like you said, login layer. Just, hey, I logged into my EVM account today, and that has all my shit there, and my games feel very ubiquitous across that EVM package. That's the gaming future I've been waiting for like, 5 years, man.
Have you looked at the Abstract much? Because it feels like that might be like,
I haven't actually been using it as much, but I know Finn, right? He was at Sky Mavis before, so I've met up with him in person a couple times. Very bullish on him and all the stuff that they're cooking up. I'm a bit of a front runner. I changed my PFP to that penguin, but dude, it's the rarest little pudgy you can get if you care about all the pink ones. It's got all of the pink attributes, and it's the only one with all the pink attributes. So to me, it's a one of one. So I want to like start it. If I make it big this cycle, I want to like open a bar or a restaurant or something and use my little pudgy as the logo. So I'm getting the branding out there as the bat signal. But no, I'm really bullish. I got my Pengu airdrop. I've been holding it. I actually swing traded it up a little bit and increased the bag after the shakeout. So I'm really excited. I feel like they're trying to build like what I understood Flow to be, Flow Chain, but doing it right. No offense.
Yes.
Sorry. I don't mean that as a dig, but I think Abstract has that current mainstream hype and just everything that Pudgies are doing right now, I think is going to be a huge, huge link to the real world. Very bullish, dude.
Luka is just absolutely crushing it. So I'm super bullish.
Yeah, it's really hard to break through to that level. And I don't want to sound like a hater, but I was never a big Bored Ape guy. I have a Genesis Cyber Kong. You know, I'm into some monkey pictures, but never got into the Bored Ape culture that much. There are opportunities to buy a mutant, and I just never did because I didn't feel the vibe. It was a little too bro-y, you know, it just had, there was something about it that didn't really resonate with me. I tried to be an artifact guy, that just got shut down. So it's down bad, 7.5 ETH for that clone X, liquidated for 0.3. Oh, that one hurt.
Yeah.
I got a lot of sneakers in my closet. Yeah. So if I ever make it to Australia, I'll bring some of my artifact gear and we can do a photo shoot, dude.
There you go, Kevin. yeah, so many, painful stories of buying NFTs at the top.
But I think Pudgies are on the path, and it does make me happy to see them, you know, kind of take the crown. And I think the culture that they're building is going to be a lot more appealing to the mainstream than what Bored Ape was doing. Again, I don't mean 100%. That as a dig as much as just an honest observation that the Penguins are a lot more wholesome, and their branding is a lot more, you know, the normies in my life look at the Penguin and go, hey, that's pretty cool. And they look at the Apes and go, that thing's kind of weird. It's a big difference.
100%. Yeah. I mean, Apes will, I mean, they're trying to do a bunch of other gaming things and, you know, metaverse, other side. Pudgies can do anything, like, you know, card games, toys, mobile games, metaverse, like, they've just got like, gifts. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to stop myself from selling everything, just buying more Penguins and Penguin tokens. Because, why not?
Dude, it's been so resilient. That chart is, for how big that FDV is, and given that the token doesn't really do that much right now, very impressed. Yeah. I'm glad I've been diamond handing that shit. Well, cool, man. I don't want to take up too much of your time. I really appreciate you sitting down to chat with me. Any like 2025 predictions you want to throw out there? January is great for throwing out lofty predictions that don't necessarily have to be rooted in reality.
Let's see. 2025, I think. I think we will get a gaming meta. I mean, it's not too out there, but all the attention is on memes and AI right now. But I think there's always like pockets of metas within crypto, and gaming will have its moment, I think, this cycle sometime this year. I think we will see multiple nation states get Bitcoin strategic reserves this year, which I think will have a very positive impact on price.
That's cool.
Let's just leave it at that. We'll get more ETFs. I think it's a Solana ETF, probably a Ripple ETF at the current pace. We're seeing things will happen this year. But I also think, you know, it will probably crash massively at some point this year as well.
Yeah, okay. So you think we'll see some big up and some big down, crazy volatility in 2025?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I hope I'm wrong. I hope it just keeps going up. And I'm sitting in stables and everyone else is making money. But I'm taking profits because I've learned from the past. So I'm just taking profits this time.
Yeah. Now, a lot of kind of more normie folks in my network have been asking about the Trump inauguration, and I've been telling everyone it's either going to go up a lot or it's going to go down a lot or both. I don't think it's just going to be sideways. If he really does like first order of business, crypto executive order, I almost can't think of a more bullish catalyst. And then if we see a strategic reserve on top of that, it could blow the lid off this thing. However, it could all be talk. He could do some really stupid executive order. He could do nothing at all. We really don't know. And
such a wild card.
Yeah, we could see 75K Bitcoin again pretty easily, I think, if he doesn't live up to. There's a lot of speculative energy on he's going to go big on this. So I'm scared. I still have a lot on the table, but I'm excited. Yeah. This is what we play for, dude. You know, I didn't come this far to cash it all out now, but I've been much more responsible. 100%. I've been taking profits along the way, and you know, some hard lessons learned, but all the better for it, dude. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right?
100%. What are you, what are your biggest holdings?
I'm a huge on Ron. I also bought a lot of collectible Axie stuff at the top of the last cycle that I've kind of been round tripping, and now it's creeping back up. So some like Origin Axies, like triple Frosty Christmas stuff, like triple Japanese, like low breed counts, this kind of stuff. I don't know that I'll ever quite get my money back on some of those that I bought in like November, but I have been holding those, and I'm planning on exiting at least half of my collectible Axie position in this cycle. Definitely going to keep my Mystic, definitely going to keep a couple of my really prized collectibles, but I have way too many. My biggest bet right now is on Ron. I've got a whole bunch staked in some validators and stuff. I was DCAing into that all the way down below 50 cents. So that felt really good sitting
That's
here
awesome.
With my buddies just like, I think it's, I think I can. So already have felt pretty good on Ron. And I have a shitload of NFTs, dude. I have too many CyberKongs. I'm a big ETH NFT guy. So at some point I do plan on selling this Pengu. You know, I've got an okay little Pengu bag, but I do plan on parting ways with that at some point. So I want to try really hard to not round trip stuff and remember that, dude, you can always buy stuff back. What are you getting attached to? It's a picture. It's a picture.
Yes.
You know, it's okay. when we're talking about tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars, I need to buy property. You know, I need to become an adult. I'm 35. There's no reason I should be renting anymore when we're trading digital pictures for, you know, the amounts of money that some people make an entire year. So anyway, I'm planning on being much more responsible this cycle, but way too big on NFTs and Ronin in particular, man.
I mean, my portfolio in late 21, even like early 2022, I think was 99 plus. My entire net worth, like even the crypto portfolio, my entire net worth was over 99% in ETH NFTs, which was probably not ideal. But I've basically been working to get that percentage down over time. Unfortunately, the market crashed, which helped bring it down. But it's still probably like 30 to 40%. Yeah. NFTs, which is kind of wild.
And I, this whole time, basically since I moved to Puerto Rico a couple of years ago, I've just been DCAing into a stock dividend portfolio. And that's been my like, hey, there's no reason that I can't put $500 a week into, you know, Robinhood or Fidelity or whatever. Like, this is so easy. It's really not a lot of money. Just do it. And obviously over time it builds up. And I'm really glad that I did that, because after a few years, it feels like, hey, I got this extra safety net that obviously you could always deploy. Now there's so much accessibility for crypto. It's actually pretty easy to deploy into a quick swing trade if you want to. You know, a lot of these platforms are really low fees or free now, thanks to the trend that Robinhood created so long ago now. So, it's amazing. Crypto is so accessible. Like, obviously, I believe more in on-chain holdings. But if we're talking about like, hey, I want to do an Ethereum swing trade because I think an ETF is going to get approved over a course of a week, I don't mind trading it like a stock for, you know, a quick 100%. Little game. No big deal.
Easiest.
Low friction. Totally. So it's good to diversify risk-wise too, right? Good OPSEC to have.
Absolutely.
Couple seed phrases, you know, multi-sig, a hot wallet, you know, just have stuff. Life's fucking weird, man. Yeah. Life's unpredictable. So.
Yeah. No central points of failure, basically.
100%. Yeah. There's, yeah, those are hard lessons to learn too. We're going to get into that part of the cycle again where it's like the weekly PSAs of back up your shit. Hey, that Trezor that you bought a month ago, set it up today. Just plug it in and set it up. Stop waiting. Those conversations are always hard.
it sucks when you see people get hacked and scammed. Or just like, even like the fires in LA, people had their seed phrases and they didn't have it backed up elsewhere. And it's like, that obviously it's an extreme example. Never expect your house to burn down, but
it almost happened to me in Colorado. I was in Iceland for Christmas one year, like 2021, I think, actually. And there was this crazy, similar to California, there was a fire that started because some tree blew down. And then there were these like 60 mile an hour gusts. And there were these like flaming tornadoes that blew into the city. And the fire stopped right on the edge of my apartment building. And I was sitting in Iceland watching the fire spread. I'm like, My building's in the burn zone, and thinking like, okay, I think at the time my seed phrase was in there, but I had the wallet with me. So I was like, okay, I could immediately, so like I had a path, but I was looking at that wallet like, oh my God, please, you know, just that was one of the scariest moments in my life, you know? And that was in 2021 when that shit, like you said, it was like 98% of my net worth was on that fucking wallet. I diversified immediately after that. That was the tight butthole moment I needed to really go, okay, this is stupid. You know, what am I doing to myself? Why?
Yeah.
This is irresponsible. This is not worth the risk or the stress.
Yeah.
So yes, it can happen. And that like, in that Colorado fire, they reported it as unprecedented. So like crazy shit that's never happened before. It's never happened until it happens. You know, there's never been a fire here. Like, you know, well, that doesn't mean you're immune to it, dude. That doesn't mean your neighbor can't do something stupid and light their stove on fire, you know?
Yeah. Think about the worst case scenario and then think about like some even worse than that. And,
No, gotta stay safe. Well, wow, really ended this thing on a downer, dude. We had a great podcast the last 5 minutes of old guys being like, hey, kids, be responsible. Only you can prevent seed phrase destruction.
If even one person shows up their security because of this, then it's all worth it.
100%. No, that's a net benefit. So, no, Zeneca, man, thank you so much. This has been totally awesome. If I can ever help you out with anything, please don't be a stranger, man. Always happy to chat with fellow gaming, poker, crypto nerds, a lot of concentric circles.
There's a lot of things that we're interested in.
So if you're ever in the States, man, you know, let me know. If you're ever at a same conference, let's chat, grab a beer or whatever. And I've been to New Zealand once. I went for Exile Con, a Path of Exile guy, you know, that because that's where GGG is.
I just downloaded POE 2 the other day and started getting into that.
It's good. It's hard.
Such a time sink,
though. It's hard. Yeah, it's different. I'm not as crisp as I used to be. I find myself getting frustrated. But yeah, I keep saying I need to find an excuse to get to Australia one of these days. So the more folks I meet, the more it makes sense to just go and do a tour and just, you know,
see
the Outback. Yeah. Totally. All right. Well, cool, man. Anything you want to plug or get out there before we close it out? No? Good to go? Zen Academy?
Not really. go check out Zen Academy. My Twitter's at Zeneca, and then there's links to everything there, so just go check it out. But yeah, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Perfect. Likewise, man. Pleasure's all mine. Hopefully we can do it again sometime.
Absolutely.